If you've seen the photos of the iridescent oil slick from space and the heartrending images of dead sea turtles washing up on the shore, you probably feel like it can't get much worse in the Gulf. And believe me, I hate to be the bearer of bad news. But a senior executive with BP told members of Congress yesterday things could get a lot worse, 12 times worse, to be exact, behind closed doors.
The earth is leaking, you know? It's like leaking oil.
Yeah, they've...
It's like the spill is the earth. You know?
That's exactly right. And behind closed door, this BP exec, I don't know if you heard this, John, but he says as many as 60,000 barrels of oil could eventually leak into the Gulf every day if they don't cap this. That's 2.5 million gallons. That's a number that I can't really comprehend. Maybe that doesn't put it into perspective for you either, but we do have two guests here to help us get our minds around this disaster. Bob Hernon joins us again. He's author of This Borrowed Earth, Lessons from the 15 Worst Environmental Disasters Around the World, also a former assistant attorney general for the state of New York, where he tried the Love Canal case. And Wes Tunnell is a coastal ecologist and oil spill expert at Hart Research Institute for the Gulf of Mexico Studies at Texas A&M University Corpus Christi. That's a long title, Wes. Good morning.
Good morning.
Robert, I want to start with you, and I want to let's quickly go down this list of the world's worst spills, because even Exxon Valdez doesn't enter into the top 30. The Persian Gulf spill in 1991, that's the top. That was about 400 million gallons, though we don't really know. I mean, some estimates go as high as nearly 600 million. And then there was Ixtoc 1, which is an oil rig also in the Gulf of Mexico. That was in 1979. That spilled out 140 million gallons. And then Exxon Valdez, that's the largest in American waters. And perhaps the one we're most familiar with, it was also relatively recent. So compare this for me. Where does this rank?
Well, it's too early to tell, actually, because we're still waiting to see what the impact is going to be on the ecosystem and the commercial resources. We can speculate as to how damaging it's going to be, but we don't quite know yet. As to where it fits within this kind of pantheon of oil spills, I don't think the people who live and work along the Gulf Coast care. And they know that there's a whole lot of toxic oil headed their way. The only thing they care about is when is it going to hit, where is it going to hit, and how much is going to hit their shore. It's kind of like a patient who's had some symptoms and taken some tests, and they know it could be bad, it could be cancer, and they're waiting around for the test results, and they're very anxious about that.
Yeah, it reminds me of somebody from, I believe it was the National Wildlife Federation, who said, for that bird covered in oil, this is the worst spill in history.
Right. And the confinement in the Gulf is really the big threat there. It's kind of what you were saying about the South African penguins. It's the proximity to all these habitats that's really the problem.
Yes, and that's one of the reasons why it's so comparable to Exxon Valdez. Very similar ecosystems and the threat to a major, major ecosystem and commercial interests.
Wes Tunnell, there are some eerie similarities between this one and the number two largest spill. They were both oil rig explosions in the Gulf of Mexico. In both cases, the oil gushed for a long time before it was finally capped. Is there some similarities that you see between this one and Ixtoc 1?
Yes, there are some similarities and some differences, and Bob characterized it correctly when he noted that each spill is different, and it depends a lot on location, environmental conditions, what the ecosystems are that are there, what type of oil is spilled. So those are all important factors to look at. But the Ixtoc spill in the southern Gulf was in shallower water, 150 or 200 feet, and it spewed for 9 months at about 30,000 barrels a day. It coated almost a half to two-thirds of the shoreline of the Gulf of Mexico, mostly southern Gulf of Mexico. So that's a huge area if we're talking 2,300 miles or so of shoreline for the entire Gulf of Mexico. This spill now threatens 100 to 150 miles of shoreline, a smaller area now. But again, as Bob said, we're just waiting to see. It could be much more than that.
And we're not entirely sure how the currents will carry the oil out of the Gulf of Mexico, or if they will.
Yes, that's correct. Only time will tell. If we look at this on the much-used environmental sensitivity index, a scale of 1 to 10, those marshes of the Mississippi Delta are a 10 on that scale.
Wow.
Wow.
Wow, that's incredible. Bob, what can we learn from these past spills that can help us to understand what may be coming next, especially speaking to the people in Florida and Mississippi and Louisiana? What can you tell them?
Yeah, there's a lot of anxiety, and I think to the extent that they know what's happened in other sites, especially Exxon Valdez, it's probably the most comparable. It looks as if this site's heading towards a disaster. The scope of Exxon Valdez, we're certainly going to look towards 11 million if those recent estimates of 40,000 to 60,000 barrels, and I object to the word barrels because it really it's more in terms of gallons, thousands and thousands and millions of gallons, then we're going to see something that happened like what happened at Exxon Valdez. And there we already know that there's about 3 million gallons in the spill now. It could reach 11. The real difference is, the ecosystem and the commercial resources are very similar to both places, but the uncertainty is the weather. In Exxon Valdez, the spill happened on Good Friday morning. By Easter Sunday, they had tested the dispersants and they had checked it burning, and they thought they were going to go ahead with those on Sunday, Easter Sunday. Unfortunately, a spring storm came through with 73-mile-an-hour winds that took the 11 million gallons and blew them over 1,300 miles of rugged coastline. So that changed the nature of the game in Exxon Valdez. Luckily, so far, we're okay in this Gulf. That could change very quickly with the weather patterns.
And they haven't capped it yet. You know, the other thing, West Tunnel, one of the terrible lessons that we've learned from Exxon Valdez is that the oil is still there. They are still finding animals in that area with oil on them.
Yes. Well, that's a unique difference in the area. We've learned over the years of many spills that in colder areas, the oil remains much, much longer than in warmer, particularly tropical areas where it not only evaporates faster, there are lots of microbes in the area that can eat up the oil. The Gulf of Mexico actually naturally seeps or leaks the equal of one or two supertankers a year. And so it's a pretty resilient body of water for naturally eating up, so to speak, that oil that's naturally leaking out.
Cold comfort for the residents along the Gulf of Mexico shore. That is West Tunnel with the Heart Research Institute for Gulf of Mexico Studies at Texas A&M University, Corpus Christi. He joined us from Texas. And Robert Emmett Hernan is author of This Borrowed Earth, Lessons from the 15 Worst Environmental Disasters Around the World, also former Assistant Attorney General for the State of New York, where he tried the Love Canal case. Thank you to both of you.